Now, my first guest this afternoon is the co-author of the UCD Working in Ireland survey. She is Assistant Professor of Human Resource Management at the University, Dr. Maria Balzayan. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, Maria.
Thank you, Kira, for having me. Thank you.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time. It's very interesting. Mental health of parents with children in final years of primary school were the most impaired by homeworking during the pandemic. You've noted some other, you know, massive things in this study. But to begin, exactly what did the study ask and what was its purpose?
It's been the first representative study of the workforce in Ireland in terms of working at home and employee wellbeing.
Maria, unfortunately, you're in a bit of a bad coverage area, so I don't know if you want to just move around a little bit, because I do want to hear more about this. This is a UCD study. It was presented yesterday at a conference, and it finds the effects of home working varied across parents with children of different ages. Hopefully, Maria will be able to hear you a little clearer now. How is that?
Yes. Is that better?
Perfect. Sorry. Okay. Continue, please.
Yeah, so we undertook the first representative study about working at home during the pandemic in Ireland. We surveyed over 2,000 people in the country, and we wanted to basically know the experiences of people and their preferences. So I suppose there is a kind of a positive story here, which is that people were more productive during the pandemic. But there are also negative consequences to it. The first one being an increased work effort and work intensification. What does this mean? It really means that people were working more hours at home, and their work was more intense. So they were working toward tight deadlines, and they were working at high speed. Now, the news about it is that this was particularly significant and pronounced for women.
Yeah, 9.5% of people worked mostly at home. 11%
yes.
Worked between 4 and 8 months at home. 6% between 1 and 3, and 4% less than a month. But it
yes.
did find the study that working at home is associated with an increase in employees' productivity. So it's kind of almost surprising that some employers who can afford, and I don't mean financially, to have their employees at home would want them back in the office if they're more productive at home.
Yeah, I suppose that's a challenge that every employer has at the moment. It's related also to the nature of the job. So there are certain tasks that can be carried out in the workplace necessarily, but others that can be done at home. So it kind of varies depending on the sector, depending on the type of job. But it is a challenge, and they have to come to terms with some parameters around it within the next month. And I think they're probably struggling with it at the moment. We are also advocating, or we're asking employers in a way to try to be flexible and accommodate preferences of their employees. Because for some people have been really a kind of a stressful time, maybe not for others, but I think it could be good that the employers may think about accommodating as well.
You did note the effect on women's health are particularly stark. 43% did report an impairment in their mental health and well-being. That was in comparison to almost a third of men, which is also
right.
not an inconsiderable proportion, you did say. Women were also more likely to report that their physical health had deteriorated, as had their relationship with those whom they lived with. So a real toll taken on women, again, shown in
yes.
other studies, but in yourself, with yourselves at the Working in Ireland survey 2021 UCD?
Yeah, I suppose we didn't include like household chores, distribution or anything like that could measure, you know, if there was some sort of a balance between men and women in their households. It could have been interesting. We didn't have that data. But I suppose there has been associations between that type of household work more, you know, relying more on women than men over the years. So I suppose that might have been also a cause for that intensification and kind of mental health impairment. We don't have that data. That's the kind of the honest answer to your question.
Mm.
But it could be that obviously there is a gender issue kind of prevalent in our homes, and it probably came to the forefront now with the pandemic as well.
It also said, no surprise, that the longer the employees remained working from home, the more likely they are to prefer a hybrid approach to working in the future. And workers who reported the lowest levels of productivity, they had the strongest desire to return to the office when the restrictions were lifted. That makes sense. And if we go back to those who want the hybrid approach, it makes more sense, as every single day fuel costs are increasing. And we know a lot of residents here in County Kildare would travel to the capital every day. And unfortunately, the public transport network, it just isn't up to scratch, I guess, for people not to need almost the hybrid working model now.
Yeah, that's correct. The cohort that preferred to go back to the workplace on a full-time basis always felt that we're always on or always connected outside working hours. So that could have been also a cause for their now preference. I suppose, again, we would like to invite everybody, all stakeholders, to take people's preferences into account. So sometimes people have situations at home where they can actually not work from home. So it could be, you know, their accommodation circumstances or whatever. Some people would prefer to go back to the workplace full time. So I suppose it's a time to kind of reflect on what people are saying, on their experiences, and try to look into the future, taking all that into account with the new legislation and the new kind of policy implications at company level.
Well, thank you very much for, I guess, relaying the findings to us there. That is Dr. Maria Bellazon. She is Assistant Professor of Human Resource Management at UCD. It's UCD's Working in Ireland Survey 2021. You can find out more information on the UCD website. And just if we go into a little bit more detail here in terms of the mental health of parents with children, 42% of those with children aged between 8 and 12 in the late stage primary school years reported that their mental health was impaired while they were working from home. It compares to 29% of those with infants between 1 and 3. Is an infant between 1 and 3? I would have thought an infant was, you know, a few months younger than one. Anyway, 33% of those with children in the early years of primary school, and 31% of parents with children aged between 13 and 18. I mean, there was a lot on their shoulders that they had to deal with, especially during the lockdowns that we did have in this country. I mentioned the cost of living and fuel prices. Well, energy security and exploring domestic oil and gas supplies, that has been discussed in the Dáil this morning. The Rural Independents, they have brought a motion calling for government action amid the growing energy crisis that we have in this country and worldwide. Those opposed to the motions have said bringing more fossil fuels to the grid is not the answer. The government has filed a counter motion. This is highlighting sustainable commitments. While People Before Profits TD Breed Smith disagrees with both measures. We'll hear from her just now.
They are right in that the Greens are failing, but not ironically, as the deputies seem to think. They are failing to deliver radical measures on climate emergency demands, to stop data centres, to retrofit the homes on the scale we need, to deliver free public transport. We need that to tackle the root causes of the crisis.
There you go. Is an election coming soon? It sounds like it with a lot of these opposition TDs, but who knows? Now, you may have heard that people in this country who give blood will be asked for details about their sex life. That is under a new screening system. The change is set to come into effect later this year, and it aims to focus on individual cases and not risk categories. The Irish Blood Transfusion Service did tell the Irish Times it will be non-discriminatory, as all donors will be asked the same questions. It comes as criteria for men who have sex with men was changed earlier this year in an effort to be more inclusive. We follow the UK and Canada. Deferral periods for gay and bisexual men could be scrapped, and gay and bisexual men previously, they had to wait for a 12-month deferral period after sexual activity. That was reduced to 4 months in March this year. And I am joined now by the Medical and Scientific Director with the Irish Blood Transfusion Services. That is Dr. Tor Hervig. Good afternoon to you, Tor.
Good afternoon.
Thank you very much for taking the time and speaking to us. We know that yourselves and the IBTS have noted that you want to identify who the high-risk donors are that should not donate. Explain that a little more. What would it mean to be a high-risk donor?
High-risk donor implicates that you have higher risk of having an infection that can be transmitted through transfusion, so that we have to identify those risk persons in order to ensure the safety of the patients who receive transfusions.
Now, previously, obviously, I mentioned there gay and bisexual men, they had to wait for a 12-month deferral period after sexual activity. But that has now been reduced to 4 months since March. Has that changed the number of people coming forward to donate to the service?
We have no accurate statistics because we are not too allowed to record that kind of information. But there has obviously not been a very high increase in number of donors. So maybe that deferral period, the change in deferral period has not been very effective, really.
Okay, yourselves have said it's going to be non-discriminatory, this questionnaire that people will have to give in terms of their detail. All donors will be asked the same questions. It will ask prospective donors about sexual practices, that includes oral sex, but specific questions are still being finalised and will be tested in focus groups before being introduced. In regards to, I guess, confirming those questions, Tor, what exactly are IBTS doing? Are they interacting with certain groups and organisations or the general public?
First, I would like to say that the question of oral sex may be deleted. If it's still going to be there, it will be for all donors. But it's true, the IBTS has already interacted with HIV Ireland, and we are meeting patient organisations later during the coming weeks. In addition to, we have specific talks with specialists. And we also have social behaviour review group led by Professor Mary Horgan, who did an excellent job. So we have a lot of background material. So we are now calculating the residual risk, so to say, also taking into consideration that we have a very safe testing system. So the aim is to have safe questions for every donor, and the question should not be discriminative, so that nobody feels offended by the questions.
So the Irish questionnaire is going to ask all prospective donors about their sexual practices. I talked about the specific questions being finalised. You noted it there. But it goes on to speak about, depending on initial answers, what happens after that stage. In terms of the initial answers, Tor, at what stage is one being asked this? Does it mean going onto the ibts.ie website and filling out if you're able to donate? Or does it mean when you're actually in the donation clinic that you'll be given these tablets to fill out the questionnaires?
The good thing is that we will be able to have the forms available on the website. And we will also prepare a lot of information material so that all donors are prepared, both the established blood donors and the new ones, because it's extremely important for us to make the donors understand why we ask these questions. And I should just say that we already ask a lot of questions, so in reality, I think the change will be quite minor, really.
Okay, because depending on the initial answers in terms of that questionnaire, more detailed questions could be asked. It's similar to the United Kingdom system. Go into a little bit more detail about these detailed questions that could follow up.
I think for the UK, and the system is working very well in UK, very few donors have been offended by the questions. For instance, in UK they ask, have you had a new sexual partner or had sex with more than one partner in the past 3 months? And if you answer yes to that, you will have a follow-up question, did you have anal sex? So I should say that we are not quite convinced that the anal sex question is necessary, because we are not sure that's the optimal question to raise. So that's why we are going to have these focus groups, because we want to ask the donors and how they react and how they interpret the questions.
Okay, now just moving slightly from that questionnaire, the country could face blood supply shortages in the coming months. I've spoken before to your colleague Stephen Cousins at IBTS about this, and the service has said that it has 4 days of national stock as opposed to the recommended 7 at the moment. We know there was a delegation. Did you travel to Belfast yesterday,
Tor? We had a delegation to Belfast.
Yeah.
And it was a very we were very, very well received, and it was a great pleasure for us to be there, and very informative, luckily.
Okay, okay, and obviously finding out more about, you know, the UK system. But in terms of the stock tour, this 4 days instead of seven, just how crucial is it to have the seven? And, you know, as a general public, should we be worried?
No, I think you should not be worried, because we monitor the situation on a daily basis, and we can make additional efforts when needed. So all patients get their blood, and that's our commitment.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. That is Dr. Tor Hervaig. He is the Medical and Scientific Director with the Irish Blood Transfusion Services. And the final phrasing of the questions in this questionnaire is not ready, as Dr. Tor did note to us. They're working on the optimal phrasing, you know, speaking with focus groups. And he has said previously, we must not pose questions that will offend donors so that they will not come to us. So these questions, they were designed, the model based on data from the HSE, Canada and the UK. The latter, that is the UK, the FAIR system for the assessment of individualised risk, which the Irish model is drawn heavily from, was introduced on World Donor Day last year. So yesterday, Tuesday, was World Blood Donor Day, but in 2021 it was introduced in the UK, and as part of British ambitions is to make blood donation policy fairer and more inclusive. I have the Chief Executive of Alone joining me now, and we're going to discuss, today is International Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and almost 16,000 cases of elder abuse have been reported to the HSE in the past 5 years. The Chief Executive, Sean Moynihan, joins me now. Hi, Sean.
Good afternoon. Thanks very much.
Thank you for taking the time. Obviously, yourselves at Alone, you are a charity that supports older people to age at home. And you noted that many older people experienced, no surprise, a loss of independence due to the pandemic, the safety restrictions, and had to resort to relying on others for support and assistance in their day-to-day lives. And the number of abuse concerns relating to the over-65s increased from 3,029 in 2016 to a peak of 3,412 in 2020. Obviously, the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic, not an increase we ever want to see.
No, I think at the end of the day, look, as you say, it's Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and it is bringing to light to people to know that there's 3,000 to 4,000 cases every year. And we also think there's a lot of underreporting. Our experience shows when working with older people who maybe are struggling with elder abuse or people taking advantage of them, it can be very hard to get people to report, because they maybe have become dependent on an individual, even though that individual is not working with the older person in a way in their best interests.
How can we as a general public help those who may be suffering from elder abuse? Because just like any sort of abuse, people do feel, I guess, stigma and shame, unfortunately, about coming forward.
Absolutely. I think, look, it's really difficult. You know, we see the progress and the reports around even things like domestic violence, etc. Do you know what I mean? It is only by having conversations around these things that we highlight what can go on in our community. Do you know? So for us, it's about people, older people themselves, being vigilant, to watching out, to staying well connected within their community and well supported. And if people, maybe if they're going through poor health, or maybe if they're becoming slightly dependent on somebody, if there is anything around finance, emotional abuse or psychological abuse, to reach out to take advice of how they're going to cope with that and make sure that it stops.
And Alone, the charity today, on Elder Abuse Awareness Day International, that is, you're calling for the urgent introduction of a national adult safeguarding legislation. Explain that to us a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, I suppose in Ireland, unfortunately, over the history of the last 10 or 15 years, we've seen an awful lot of situations where vulnerable adults have been taken advantage of or abused. So ultimately, is there was legislation going through the Dáil pre the pandemic, the Adult Safeguarding Bill. And really what we'd like to see is that completed and a National Adult Safeguarding Authority is set up, and that the structures and the supports are fully there to help people. I think there is no better example in Ireland of where we see that if we don't have good safeguarding, if we don't have good structures, you know, that ultimately these things can go wrong.
Look, I really appreciate your time this afternoon. That is the Chief Executive of Alone. Today is International Elder Abuse Awareness Day. Sean Moynihan speaking there. Almost 16,000 cases of elder abuse reported to the HSE in the past 5 years. And as I noted, there was an increase in 2016. There was 3,000 and let me just get the exact figure. 3,029 cases reported, and a peak of 3,412 in 2020, obviously the first year of the pandemic. And as Sean is noting, the charity is calling for the introduction of a national adult safeguarding legislation. And of course, if you'd like to get in touch with Alone, there are numbers here. I'll give you the Dublin office telephone number. It's 01679 1032, and a Carlow telephone number. Lots of listeners say of the county I know will be close to Carlow, 059 913 6340. There's also Louth, Donegal, Kilkenny. I'll give out Kilkenny's number as well, 056 777 2151. Many of you may be au fait with their email, etc., and you can get in contact with Alone at hello, H-E-L-L-O, at alone, A-L-O-N-E .ie. And of course, the national support line needs to be given out. That's 0818 222 024, and then you can press 1 to speak to staff at the front desk of the charity. And again, lots of you listening south of the county, close to Carlow, maybe we've got some Carlow Kilkenny listeners. The HSE in the south east, the community healthcare as part of a certain area of the region that supports, they led a safeguarding committee, and they today, marking World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, had a informal coffee morning at the HSE's office in Lachlan in Kilkenny, and they launched an information newsletter which has a lot more detail about the rights that you should have of some of the Southeast's most vulnerable citizens, it notes here, and reminds everyone that safeguarding adults at risk of abuse is a societal responsibility that everyone must play a part in. Again, the Alone National Support Line, 0818 222 024. Now, the Western Development Commission undertook its third annual National Remote Working Survey, and it did show that the coastal counties, they're the preferred location for those considering relocation. I'm joined now by Deirdre Frost. She is the Policy Analyst and DigiWest Project Manager with the Western Development Commission. Good afternoon to you, Deirdre.
Good afternoon, Ciara. Thanks for having me.
So we heard during the pandemic, you know, it was a seismic shift. Many things were going to change. We're still in it. I'm sure there's still some people that are considering moving elsewhere in the country. But of those who have already located due to the pandemic and remote working, most of them have moved to the more populous counties. But all counties did welcome residents. Galway and Cork, they're the top two destinations for relocation.
Thanks. Yes, Ciara. I suppose I should clarify, this is data we've just published today on remote working and relocation, but we already published the full survey, third annual remote work survey that we've done with NUIG a couple of months ago, which is available on our website, westerndevelopment.ie. So the work I have just published today is looking exclusively at those who would consider relocating and have already relocated.
So what I think is very interesting is that most of the people are moving to the more populous counties, which would lead one to understand a more populated county, house prices are higher, because we'd heard kind of maybe mid-pandemic that people were going to be going to counties that maybe aren't as populated and house prices might be a little cheaper than the county would say they're leaving or relocating from.
Absolutely. I suppose the numbers play an important feature in terms of how many people are more likely to move anyway. As you say, every county received new residents on foot of relocating during the pandemic, new workers, I should say. What's interesting is to distinguish, and it's in our report, on those who would consider relocating, which is in the thousands, like a couple of thousand people, versus those who actually relocated, which was more like 700 people. And when you actually look at the data, Kildare, interesting, comes out quite well. So 4.9% of all those relocated from Kildare during the pandemic, but 7.7% relocated into Kildare. So actually, Kildare had a net increase of people, of workers who relocated on account of the pandemic and remote working.
Yeah, by 4.6% that increase was then net, as you say. Also, counties in the Greater Dublin area, obviously Kildare included, Wexford, Wicklow, Meath, 5.9% for Wicklow, 5.7% for Wexford, and Meath, 3.4%. We know here in this county we're a rent pressure zone. We look at other counties, we know they're struggling with house prices. We heard new CSO stats today. I believe, Deirdre, that Kildare, the third county in terms of the highest one would spend on a house out of the 26, Dublin and Wicklow, just before Kildare. So getting an increase, it's great that people want to come to the county, but in another way, it's not great news for people who are trying to get on the property ladder.
Absolutely. I mean, Ciara, there's huge challenges, and I think the remote working and the pandemic has highlighted some of them in terms of people's appetite to move out of, as you say, more expensive areas in terms of housing. But what we may be seeing now in terms of the new data we've published today is the appetite for people, as you say, to move into counties near Dublin. So maybe this is a feature of the hybrid work practices that may be coming to pass, whereby people still need to be near Dublin, if that's where they work, to go into the office a couple of days a week, if that's what's required. But maybe they don't need to go every day, so maybe they're more likely to move into, as you say, the Greater Dublin area, where housing may be a bit more affordable than in Dublin, but still, as you say, there's huge pressures there. We will know more when we conduct the survey this time next year. But again, all of these are interesting patterns that are arising out of the new patterns of remote working we're seeing, as well as the continuing pressure on house prices.
Now, of the people who have relocated, I think you said over 700, isn't it?
Yes.
Two-thirds, 63% have actually left the capital.
62% of those who relocated left the capital.
And
as you say, they are the ones who are moving both to the Greater Dublin area and then the coastal counties. And I suppose every county is receiving new people, but the higher demand is in the coastal counties and in, to a lesser extent, the Greater Dublin area.
Now, people who have relocated, about three quarters of them in the past 12 months, that's the relocation, they're under the age of 40 and they have a high level of education.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the reasons we wanted to publish this data and try and understand who are the people who are relocating. So as you say, they seem particularly young compared to the survey population and indeed workers in general. So three quarters of those who relocated are aged under 40 years, compared to less than half of the survey population. And even if you drill down into lower age groups, a quarter of all those who relocated were under 30 years of age, compared to 12% of the survey respondents. So a quarter of all the people who have relocated in the last year due to COVID and remote working, obviously that answered our survey, were under 30 years of age, which is particularly young. And as you say, they're also more educated than the profile of the survey population. This could be more to do with the type of work they're in, be it in terms of the educational profile of the occupations and their ability to remote work. Again, that's hard to tell from this data, but we will look at it in more detail.
And in terms of the gender, women were more likely to have relocated.
More women than men relocated, but the difference wasn't as huge as the age factor, as we've pointed out. We did actually, back to your point on home ownership and house prices, we did ask the question in the report, did you own your home or did you rent your home? And of those who already relocated because they can work remotely, 46% were renting their home, which is higher than the survey population. So more of them were renting. That said, a majority of those who did relocate did own their home. So it's not clear to what extent ownership of a home is a big factor in relocating, or it's not the only factor, obviously.
It's very interesting looking at all this. And as you said, this survey and surveys like it will continue. This time next year, we'll have more data. We know that we'll hear more from the census in the next few months. Also, that will give us more of an idea of the populations of our county. And here in Kildare, we're believed to see an increase in the next few weeks. Look, I really appreciate you coming on. I just want to go over this one more time, Deirdre. Galway and Cork, they're the top two destinations for possible relocation. But as Deirdre said, every county has welcomed new residents, including here in Kildare. We've had a net increase of 4.6% in terms of our population. Thank you so much to Deirdre Frost.
Thank you, Ciara.